Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm your co-host, Grant Spanier.
And I'm your other co-host, Vince Cochi.
Couple of co-hosts for a hostful edition of the podcast. This is episode 18, and we are guestless. We've got twice the host, and that's the most.
That's the most amount of hosts you can have in an episode.
For this particular episode, at least, or for this particular podcast, excuse me, I'm stumbling over my words. I'm so excited to get into the episode because it's such an interesting topic, which is, was it the back and forth, Vin?
That's right, back and forth. Essentially, it is an examination of communication and the fact that that channel of discourse, when done correctly, can't be a one-way street. And the importance of having a back and forth and importance of having equal investment in a conversation and the importance of just having an open channel of communication in general.
And, you know, a lot of us are in the communication business. Yeah, that's part of our livelihood, and I think it's becoming more relevant as the amount of channels increases. And one of those channels that's sort of getting clogged up is email. And I know we talk a lot about efficiency, productivity, like clear communication, being concise. And there's a tool that I use every single day. It literally saves me probably 3 or 4 hours a week, and that's a lot of time. And because it's saving me time that is like the worst sort of waste. It's saving me that horrible time that I don't want to spend. And the tool is called SaneBox, and it's a tool I use that integrates with my email. I use Gmail to run all of my emails through every single organization, and that's a whole nother show topic. But what SaneBox does is it creates another folder for me called Sane Later. It basically filters out any sort of promotion, anything, you know, all of your like Banana Republic offers, all of your Groupons. It's going to send it all to a different folder, which you can access at any time. And it's going to send you a daily digest email of all of those sort of filtered out emails, at which point you can say yes or no. If you want to look at one, you can do that. If you want to train it to go to your inbox, you can do that. And basically, it's going to save your brain from having to process a lot of information that is really just useless.
Superfluous.
Absolutely. So I tell, you know, everyone, especially people who are doing a lot of emailing, people who are trying to just be more productive and sort of like pro up, get SaneBox, and I would go check it out. There's 2-week free trial. Use our URL and we get some kickback, which is really cool. And that's at sanebox.com/AD/10KHRS. That's AD/10KHRS. And honestly, regardless of them being a sponsor of the show, like, it's worth getting. Honestly, it's just, you owe it to yourself. It's very cheap, very worth it.
Totally. So thank you to SaneBox for sponsoring this episode, and thank you to you for listening.
Oh, thank you to me.
Thank you, Grant, for being half of the guests on this guest list episode.
Jell-O is a snack put.
So, well, before you even tell me what you're working on, let me tell you something I'm excited about.
Please.
I'm staring into those baby blues. They're actually not. What are they?
They're chocolate brown.
They're chocolate brown, which is, for any designers out there, they know the color spectrum. Chocolate brown and baby blue are very, very close. They're complementary, or they're opposites, or they're similar.
They're one Pantone shade away.
They're like the extremists in politics. You know what I mean? They're at the ends of the spectrum, but they're so close.
But the spectrum wraps around as a circle.
Yeah, it's like another dimension. I don't want to get into that stuff.
None of this is true.
What I'm excited about is that your eyes are in front of me. So today is maybe our first time ever recording in person.
Absolutely.
Oh my Absolutely. God.
We have a new live record sound booth set up.
Yeah, we got a studio.
We do. We very much do. We've got some great equipment. The help from our beautiful sponsors has made that possible. And we're very, very excited about being able to bring the guest that we love so much. in and talk to them in person is just a really cool thing.
Yeah. Berate them in person.
Offend them and alienate them one-on-one.
Yeah, it really makes us step up because typically we're hiding behind a screen, you know, and we're just saying really offensive things and then kind of snickering away from the mic. Now we got to face those fears. But yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. Here we are in person. I'm wondering how this will change the dynamic. I think only for the better. And I guess really let's not diddle daddle.
Let's not dwell.
I digress. Did I use it right?
You egress. I actually don't know what that one means.
That's like an egress window is what you're thinking of.
Oh, nice.
And actually now I'm edumacating you. You're welcome. Vince, tell me what you're working on. Wait. Yeah. Tell me what you're working on.
This week I've been doing something pretty fun. Work has kept me pretty busy with a new business pitch. I've mentioned that before, but what I've actually been putting a little time into the last couple days has been this sort of show.
Get the fuck
maybe
out
we'll
of here.
We'll talk about it. We'll call it a podcast maybe. It's not a super real thing, but it's like a thing.
It's hyper real. It's not super
real.
It's
less than hyper. It's like below super still, but it's more than not. So me and friend of the show and friend of mine, Elliot Mattson, came up with
episode six.
Episode six, for those who are following along at home. We came up with an idea, half-baked in this truest sense, to start a show about the Bill Cosby show. And we call it Cosby Cast, the cast about Cosby. You'll have to listen for yourself to find out exactly what the hook is. But it's a serious, pointed discussion about the thematic merits and motifs of the Cosby Show
program. It sounds rehearsed.
I'm reading off a tattoo that I had made of the show's mantra.
Go fuck yourself for coming in here. And offending this podcast, but you just came in to pitch a different podcast. It's clear you've moved on. You've seen greener pastures, and you've seen the Cosby sweater that is wrapped so tight around you. It's keeping you much warmer than this particular podcast. And yeah, hey, I'm glad to create a platform for you to promote your other podcasts. So what I've been working on,
but seriously for a second, it's really just like a comedic outlet for me and my friend Elliot. And I mean, it's not a podcast in the same sense of what we're recording right now.
It's very Michael Ian Black.
If anyone's a fan of Topics, the pseudo podcast from Michael Ian Black and Michael Showalter, that was our inspiration for the show actually. And you should check it out because it's a great piece of programming.
Okay. So where can people find your fucking podcast?
CosbyCast.com.
Great. I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Hey, Grant.
So this episode brought to you by Jell-O.
Jell-O is a snack.
That's the Cosby. I think that's like not a bad Cosby.
It's better than the meme I was trying to get going back in the day, Seizure Cosby. Let's not get into it.
Oh, my God.
We shouldn't do it.
We won't go down that
road. But let's promise ourselves we'll bring it back up.
Back up in the distant future. Grant. Tell me, please, if you will, what are you working on?
I am working on a few projects. Some are paying the bills. Some are not paying the bills. Some are paying the creative deposits that I need. Some are paying the student loans that I have. Some are paying... Okay, so the thing I'm most excited about right now, and this is the first time I would talk about it in any sort of public manner, but not that it's super public, but... But something you know about that music video, which will be sort of my first foray. Not solo venture, but kind of like in really owning the vision and the direction of the video. You know, I've done a lot of writing, mm-hmm. And a lot of, I don't know, you call it like pseudo producing, like producing.
Just
I guess
producing.
It is producing.
Pseudo producing.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah. I guess it's just less formal, but. I've been more in that role, and now it's kind of a opportunity for me to just really own the shit out of it. And so that's for Vasky. He's like a local EDM kind of guy, but it's really exciting because he's kind of taken some next steps with his career and with his music, and I'm really excited to be a part of telling
cool,
that
man.
Story. Yeah.
So I'm excited for you. What are you, it's like a really unique like yeah. medium to work in. What, it's not, it's like very rare.
Yeah. What an opportunity, you know, like to just, and the cool thing is these guys are so trusting and so great to work with.
Man,
where it's
that's
like
just so good.
I know. It's kind of like dream-ish. It's almost like too good. So
when the, when the client or the coworker,
collaborator, yeah.
The collaborator, perfect, yeah. Just buys in and just loves it and trusts it. Oh my God, it's too good.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm still like, it's still kind of under wraps even to them, but like I've got some stuff rolling around. I'm pretty excited about it. I think that's why I'm even comfortable even talking about it. So
very cool.
That's what I'm most excited about.
As in all things, Grant, I can't wait to see where it goes.
Hey, thanks. So speaking of where things go. No, wait, we can't here. Let's make a pact. Let's make a pact to not use the word segue once beyond the time I just did to
said
reference it
right now.
Yeah, I know.
So we just won't say the S word. But I think if you did a word cloud of our podcasts, of our previous episodes, I think it would be like this. It would go like,
well, okay,
show topic would be number one.
No, show notes.
Show notes.
Show notes, probably, right?
What number one, and then show topic, or the phrase, a whole nother topic.
A whole nother topic,
would
yeah.
be number two. Then I think segue would be three.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I think self-awareness would be
four.
Four.
I was going to say self-awareness has
four,
to be four.
And then Jessica Hish is five. And then I think that's like...
Ship It is probably six.
And
Ship It is just like the de facto. But actually, we get it probably two or three times, four or five times maybe even an episode.
Yeah,
actually, more than that, because we get about three to six at the end.
Yeah, and then the song
and
comes
then the
in.
Song just adds like 12 or 20.
So I think if you take those six terms and you remove them, you're looking at like 10 to 15 seconds of cast left.
Oh, man. We just have the intro music left.
Right, it's just intro, outro. Well, not even the outro because of the Ship It.
Hey, I'm pretty into simplifying, into distilling things down. Maybe that's the new cast.
Maybe the way we do it is we just don't make a cast. And that's how we make a cast.
Wow, God, that's so fucking smart, Vince.
Speaking of, no.
Well, hold on. So, okay. Well, maybe we intro this. Maybe during the intro we talk about this. But I think it's actually a time to discuss the current state of affairs in the 10,000 Hours podcast world.
Oh, yeah, man. I think it's as good a time as any.
And I think it's a great transition into our topic afterwards. I'm not going to use the S word. But yeah, we just brought in some people. We brought
the
in the
family
fam.
Is growing a little.
The
bit.
Fam, yeah, yeah,
yeah. And we alluded to this briefly in a previous episode, I believe. I gave a couple shout outs.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. That's a good move.
But let's make it formal. Why don't you
yeah,
go
so,
nuts, man?
So I, in the interest of transparency and almost in the self interest of talking about things that are going on as a way to alleviate the pressures of them. You know what I'm saying? That's what I love about
know.
Pete Holmes. You know what I mean?
He's
such an open book. But yes. So we initially posted an internship position, which was sort of it was not nebulous, but it was like not concrete,
open ended.
Yes,
is what it was.
We weren't sure, and we got pretty good response from people.
Like eye opening,
enthusiastic.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean enthusiastic. We're talking like. Think of somebody with some enthusiasm. Okay, you know, you're thinking of
them. You're now, following along at home.
Okay,
yep.
Okay. Now, like, think of the guy who's at the game, who jumps out onto the field, rips his clothes off, has some stuff painted on his stomach, and is streaking across the field.
Think of him.
Okay, now add him to that initial person, the person with the enthusiasm. Okay, now, like, forget all of that. And just think about somebody who's, like, really motivated and excited about stuff.
Oh, my God.
That's the kind of enthusiasm we had applying.
Yeah, we had a lot of really positive interest, and I mean, it was affirming and inspiring to me, at least personally.
Totally. So we sort of restructured it based on our meetings and on just our needs and everything, and we brought in not one but three people.
Not one, not two, but three interns.
Well,
and we're not exactly.
Yeah,
so that's I think that's where you were going with it.
Yeah,
when you say restructure. Because they're, I mean, to speak very frankly, they're more than interns. They're part of the team, And they're friends and collaborators.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And so it's like, it's more in the spirit of like the family. It's like one dies, we all die. Well, no, one dies, we go get the motherfucker.
Killed him.
Yeah. But no, it's just sort of about that that community aspect and about like we all are owning the success or the failure or whatever.
And we're just happy to have more people to share the excitement that we have with the cast with.
So welcome, a big 10,000 hours welcome to Matt Lenning. Matthew Lenning, I don't know exactly.
Some people are both.
Some people are particular, but we'll give him Matt Lenning, who's going to be producing and coordinating with guests and producing a lot of the web and sort of the content. Big ups to Mr. Clem.
Oh, yeah.
Whose last name I won't even venture to pronounce, which is somewhat
embarrassing.
Yeah, we're going to show notes Clem. What are we, show notes his Twitter or something?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Matt will show notes it now. Okay, so I mean, but yeah, Clem, who showed a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of smarts right out the gate, and so did Matt, and of course David Sager. We argued about it when he was here, and I told him he was wrong. But yeah, so David's going to be working on some of our audio, and Clem's going to be focusing on sort of growth and community stuff. It's just super exciting, and dude, nobody tunes in for this, so we should probably move on. But big welcome to those guys.
Just
thank you.
Exciting times all around at the show. We've got the new studio. We've got the new people on board, and
we're up in the game.
It's just exciting. It's exciting stuff.
Fuck with it.
Book with it. on that note, on the note of bringing new people on board,
yeah.
One of the most important things about new people joining a team or a project or even starting a new project in general is communication and the fact that communication cannot be a one-way channel and succeed. It has to be a back and forth, which is the topic of today's show.
BNF.
The BNF, the back and forth, the exchange of communication on an equal level.
We're talking about the pong of the words, of the info of the messages.
You're thinking yin and yang. We're thinking ping and pong. The
BNF.
Yes.
There it is. Exactly. Bring it all the way back.
Right. And just why it's important. I mean, communication is something we've touched on before and we will touch on again. It's a central tenet of creativity. But more than that, it's making sure that the communication is consistent, it's with a purpose, and it is not in any way
superfluous?
Yes.
Misleading?
Yes.
Ill-informed?
Exactly. The communication has to be smart, purposeful, and equal.
And actionable.
And I mean,
especially in a professional.
That's what I mean when I say purposeful.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be, you communicate with a reason, with a goal.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and that sort of thinking goes all the way up, especially, you know, in advertising, in design, in whatever. But I think to set the stage for what we're talking about, communication is a very, very big topic. But
vast, and we've had many shows that center around some aspect of communication.
Right. I mean, understandably so. That is kind of like a lot of what we do, and actually not just what we do, but it is really what we do as humans. And I think to set the stage,
this definitely is a topic that transcends the creative industry.
Yeah. So if you really take a step back for just a second and think about your day-to-day life, and think about all of the things you do, and the ways you interact and what you're buying at the store and what you're sending on your phone, you're texting someone, you're calling someone, social media, you're on Twitter, you're on whatever. All of these things are forms of communication in a really kind of scary way. And so communication as a whole is something that has actually become, I mean, it's been a tenet. It's been like, a very integral part of humankind, of our species, and actually a way that we've sort of evolved past a lot of other species. But it's become more and more important, especially when we think about life and work and all these things. It is so central to what we do these days. And I think even aside from all this digital bullshit, I mean, it's not bullshit, but really this digital kind of like fluff and whatever.
The trope of digital and like being out there social, that's like, I mean, it's been talked about a million times.
Yeah, yeah. From a one-to-one level, what we are doing even right now is communicating. And once you break that down, I think, and start thinking about it in a very self-aware way.
Yep.
No, but that is like one of the most important skills. It is one of the most important things in general, especially when doing work, especially I think when doing creative work, almost the most important skill, you know, because it's bred from self-awareness is communication. You know, of course, technical skills have their place. Of course, the ability to X or the ability to Y has its place, but that really all starts with communication. And I think that's a really good place for people to begin their journey, to begin their thought process, to even take a step back and consider, you know, down any path they're going is, okay, how are you communicating? What does that mean?
What am I saying?
Yeah.
What do I want to be saying?
Yeah.
What are people hearing and what do I want people to be hearing?
Yeah.
And if some of that isn't exactly where you want it to be, I mean, that's problem number one.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, communication is really us reflecting ourselves outward to other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And having an understanding of that is paramount to having an understanding of yourself.
Even communicating within yourself, which is kind of like...
Exactly.
I don't even want to go down that route because it's so scary.
Right. And so the topic isn't exactly about all, like this grand vision of communication. I mean, it is because that informs everything that we say. But I think at the end of the day, what back and forth means is a more centralized way of communication and communication processes between members of a team or a project.
That's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about. But I mean, within oneself, there's definitely a lot of communication going on.
Yes. And a miscommunication to oneself is just as dangerous as a miscommunication
even
to someone
more
else.
So I think probably because absolutely. Because that is what informs a lot, misinforms a lot of this bullshit communication that goes on between people.
Absolutely.
So I guess we there's the stage. Okay. Now to step up on the stage, what I'm thinking about is as creatives, a lot of our work has to do with communicating.
Right? How do you exactly, sometimes how you talk about the work is more important than the work itself.
That's interesting. I was thinking about, oh, okay. So we need to send a message. Like how do we refine the way we're going to talk about the thing to people. But no, you're actually even jumping ahead, which I'm all about. No, I'm all about, which is this idea of something we were talking about, I think a few days ago, even like idea survivalism, right? The Kornacochi term.
Yeah. It's something that I've experienced a lot in pitches in the ad industry. And in even just like, frankly, talking about ideas on a non creative project level with friends, like idea survivalism, and the way in which you contextualize an idea or a creative thought and what that means to the potential longevity of a creative idea or thought.
Yeah. So, I mean, there, if we put in the terms of like back and forth, there's like a huge pressure, I think. Well, not a huge pressure, a huge onus on people who are in a position to give feedback. You know, if we think about that in the advertising industry, as creative directors, especially.
Mm-hmm.
But even outside of that, in all sorts of industries, especially in sort of creative endeavors, you know, that could be music, that could be art, that could be whatever. Like, there is an onus to give good feedback and to not to over-contextualize, but to give some context for your perspective. Because the problem is, as humans, we are literally wired to seek recognition, to seek acceptance, because our genes are firing and they're telling us we need to be part of the community. We need to be, you know, X. And that is like a very survival-driven thing. And so to like talk about ideas which are not survival-driven, which are not about food or sex or
right.
Or propagation.
Or shelter.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Those are naturally vulnerable. And so people who are in a position, you need to almost recognize your own primal urges and give some context to your feedback, because so many good ideas die because they don't get good feedback.
Yes. And so many good ideas die because the person pitching them to whoever doesn't know how to contextualize their own idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't even have sympathy. It's not like I'm saying, it's not like I'm playing the violin for all the great ideas that died on the floor. If you don't know how to talk about your own idea, you don't even understand it well enough for it to succeed. So like what I'm saying here is part of the back and forth is not just, a lot of people say, oh, I shouldn't have to explain the idea. If the idea is good, it lives on its own. That's never true. Like, every idea needs context, and that context is in the form of communication.
So, in a way, what you're talking about is ideas are a dime a dozen. Ideas are cheap as fuck. And actually, if we go on like a meta level of execution, part of execution is selling or pitching or storytelling the idea, because that is what oftentimes creates the actual execution of the idea.
You know what it is? It's proof of the fact that you understand the idea well enough to execute
it,
is what it is to me. And that's why I never feel, I mean, if you can believe it, I know I have met creatives in my past that feel indignant when they have to explain an idea. And the way I feel about it is, explaining it is not a right, it's a responsibility.
Yeah.
And if you can't explain it, then there wasn't an idea there in the first place. And it might be controversial, because a lot of people say the other way, like if you have to explain it, then the idea isn't strong enough. But that's just not my school of thought.
Well, I would argue there, especially in an advertising context or even a startup context, an app or like an experience or whatever, if you have to explain the idea to the consumer, then like it's too much. So what I mean is to not gratify the people who are saying that, but to say like, if it doesn't make sense to someone, then it doesn't count. Like, you can't hide behind,
absolutely,
like, oh no, you don't understand the full scope of the idea. Well, guess what? Like, you don't have that. Like, you need to, I only understand what you are presenting me. I only am capable of understanding what you have put before
100%
me.
100% true. You can only grasp the information that you're given, and if that information comes without context, like, you don't have a fighting chance.
Son of a bitch.
So that's one means in which the back and forth is important. Do we want to start?
So I think the fourth is really what we're talking about there.
Right.
Like, you need to pitch a good idea. You need to be locked down. You need to, and let me comment real quick on this idea of like nonchalantism. Can I call it that?
Oh, you can coin that term. Can we TM it?
Nonchalantism TM. If you're on a Mac, you're looking at option 2. It's going to give you a trademark symbol.
Yeah, right.
For those keyboard shortcut enthusiasts out there. But this nonchalantism that comes with like creativity, and it's a lot of what we talk about, and I am all about this artistry and this inspiration as much as I think, I can't even say that. I want to be as much about that as a lot of artists and a lot of doers and makers. Mm-hmm. And I am in some ways, but I'm intentional about it, I guess. And I just want to call bullshit on... I want to call bullshit on this idea of like not care, like being too cool to care about selling an idea, or
right,
being too cool to care about anything. You know, I say that is just a lot of weakness in the form of like inability to be vulnerable, inability
insecurity
to show.
Is what
yeah,
it is.
No, it's insecurity, because you don't want to own that so much that it's like part of you, whatever.
Right.
And I say a real fucking pro, a real doer, somebody I really respect, owns it. They own it to the degree that they know that the pitch or the story is part of the selling process, is part of the idea. And that whole process is something that exists between you and final product. And if you're not going to acknowledge that, then you're probably fucked. And honestly, that's where like 95% of really good art projects go. And
it's to fucked city.
Yeah, they go to fucked city because they're so proud and they're so like, like indignant, non-commercial. I mean, no.
Right? Yeah, no, that's right.
That's not commercialism. That's like being smart. That's like being like intentional.
It's communication.
I care about ideas, so I will sacrifice my coolness to sell them.
Right? You got me. We talk a lot about real resources in this on this cast, and that's like time, money, energy, commitment, potential. One of those real resources is not coolness. That's not a real resource.
No.
That doesn't exist. You have an indefinite supply.
Where it does exist is in presentation. But the truly cool motherfucker is the guy, the woman, the human.
The organism with so much cool that they can just expend it at will.
Yeah. But so much cool that they practice it to a T.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, most raw coolness is not raw. Most raw coolness is manufactured to a degree. And I respect the shit out of that.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean.
Cultivated.
Yeah, cultivated.
So we're talking about the fourth. Let's go to the back. That's in the form of feedback a lot of times or correspondence.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as answering a fucking email, which I need to do better at personally. I'll say that right now. This is recorded live for posterity. I need to be better at responding to emails. But it's more than that. That's like the basis level. That's like the kindergarten of backing. And then more importantly, it's like the having an open channel of trust. It's the giving good and constructive feedback. It's understanding what that feedback is going to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. And where that starts for me, and I think with my clients and with the people I collaborate with, is setting a level of trust that is deep enough to say, I mean, I'm pretty good about my email. I'm pretty good about most forms of communication.
Yeah, absolutely.
But let's say something doesn't get answered. Like, it can escalate up, and I will be responsible for it, you know? And that's kind of what I ask of my collaborators, too. You know, a big signal to me, and a lot of what we're talking about is sort of signal and noise.
Yeah,
very absolutely. Much a Nate Silver idea. Show notes that.
show notes.
But what we're talking about there is, like, is the ultimate responsibility is that like, will you come through in the end? It's that reliability. And that's kind of what I expect out of the people I work with. And I think it's what they expect out of me.
And that's what you want them to expect out of you.
Yeah, I do. And so it's.
So do you want to share quick?
Sure.
I mean, some A, tips for good correspondence, and B, tips for good feedback.
Yeah. When I think about tips for good correspondence, like, I'm a very visual person, which is funny because, you know, I started designing maybe 2 or 3 years ago, realistically, like maybe 3 years ago. And I do professional design now, which is really funny to me.
Right.
You know, I mean, I started out writing.
You're one of my favorite personal designers.
So. Hey, that's
like the damn truth.
But. That's very kind of you. But like, Even when I was writing, I was actually really interested in format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because what format does is it influences the intake of the story or of the piece or whatever. And so, like, that was always really cool to me. It was like, you know, I come from the Chuck Palahniuk school. I know I talk about it a lot, but for good reason.
Right.
And what Chuck does, and it's something I've really, like, imbibed, a la Gryffindor sword.
I don't know what that means, but
Gryffindor sword, the Sword of Gryffindor.
I'm not an HP fan
at all. Have you seen it?
Like, I've like watched the movies, like when they're on.
You're like a geek though. Like, you're a nerd about cool
for
stuff.
Sure. I'm what a nerd about a lot of things, but I mean,
are you like, you're like nerd level? Like, oh, I'm too cool for that. Fuck you, man.
No, man, not at all. I'm not too cool for Harry Potter. I just never got into it.
I'm sorry. I got super defensive there. That was.
I mean, you got defensive and then you got aggressive. Great.
So what the fuck were we talking about?
it was like correspondence and feedback.
Oh yeah. Pro tips for the correspondence. So. Okay. So some pro tips when I think about correspondence and a lot of the stuff I see that like frustrates me. I was talking about format, and I come from the school of Chuck Palahniuk, who would oftentimes like go single line a lot of things. And he would use yes. he would use what's called a chorus, yes. okay? And yes. for example, like if I think of the book Invisible Monsters, one of my favorites, he uses a chorus that it gives him a layer of communication that breaks up the story, and it's like so it's such a nice little like
in a way it's like kind of taking an easy road, but in a way it's also adding a dynamic that is like sorely lacking from a lot of literary
I'm gonna
works.
Design on a grid because it gives me structure to my design. That's an easy road,
right? And so what's important about what I'm saying is that easy does not mean bad.
Yeah,
easy means like a device that's easy to do, maybe, but more importantly, is easy to grasp.
It's smart.
It's easy to digest, and that's what you want. I mean, you want out of your communication.
Yeah, I mean, I think beating yourself up and making things overcomplicated is like real weak and real silly for everybody
it's
involved.
Needless and just inefficient,
like poor form.
And it's just poor.
So he would use a chorus like an Invisible Monster. She's sort of this fashionista, and it's like this like high fashion photography, whatever. And she would say things like, from the perspective of like the photographer, it'd be like, give me anger, flash. Give me sexy, flash. And then it would go into like, give me childhood issues coming to the surface, flash. Give me like unfulfilled dreams, flash. You know, it was just this right. layer of like, oh, you know. And so I was obsessed with format and with structure, and I think that fed a lot of my design work, and it still feeds it. But something especially as I got into more design was in email. Formatting
and formatting in email
and consumption. Cause I mean, I'm designing flyers. I'm designing landing pages. I'm designing display ads. I design a lot of
stuff
that's
meant to be like immediately consumed.
Right. So why is email any different?
It's not.
In fact, it's like more important. And so I just see people sending, you know, 12 sentence, one paragraph emails. And I think, fuck off, you know,
the worst type of person.
No, really. Like, right. I mean, and some of my closest collaborators are guilty of this, and I get it, but we could have a whole goddamn episode about this. But I mean, in the short version, you are trying to send a message at all points, pretty much. You know, you're communicating at all times. That's just a reality. Whether it's the clothes you wear,
you don't
the way you talk,
choice,
your
right.
text, your tweets, whatever. You are communicating.
Your facial hair, the way you carry yourself, your personal philosophy. It's all communication.
It's all about that personal branding.
I don't know what that
is. It's a whole nother show topic. No. So, okay, you're communicating at all times. So be intentional. Be smart. Duh. Email is one of the most like used and abused forms of communication now. Yep. Okay. So a lot of the pros I know kill it at email. They know how to do it.
It sounds like to someone who it doesn't like live this, maybe it sounds weird to say, but it's absolutely true. When you say they kill it on email, you're not being ironic or you're not being sensational. They really do.
They communicate clearly. They manage their own time. They manage others' times. And they gain respect in that whole exchange, which is the back and forth we're talking about. Yep. And I mean, gaining respect and gaining clarity in the back and forth is pretty much what we're after. So formatting your emails. Okay. Honestly, like, for example, I send out sponsorship emails. I'm trying to get sponsorship. I'm trying to get whatever. Like, for guests, any of these things, what I realized because of being approached personally is that when I'm scrolling through your email, I have a lot of emails, not in a fucking douche way, but in just a real way.
I mean, you have a lot of emails.
I am corresponding with a lot of people. There are a lot of things going in and out, okay? So I have a limited amount of time and a limited amount of energy to take that in and to respond, whatever. Give me your ask up front. Tell me what you want.
Can't stress it enough.
No, and a lot of people we come from Minnesota where it's like...
It's a Midwestern thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's worse than ever in the Midwest. It's a universal thing, but
so
you bury the lead.
What I've gotten the habit of is even just saying, hey, X, comma, go down a couple lines. In bold, I'm writing because, or... The purpose of this email is to see if, for example, let's say sponsorship. Let's just say sponsorship. I mean, that's a very raw, vulnerable thing. I'm reaching out for sponsorship. I'm reaching out to see if X product or X brand would be interested in, not in a canned way, but like be
in
interested
in a straightforward way.
Because guess what? Like, if it's a no,
they all have figured it out.
And to bury that deep, it means to probably not get a response or to whatever.
It's irresponsible to yourself, to them.
To their time, yeah.
And so this is something that I never used to do. I don't think I actively did the reverse, but I only learned it from you, Grant. And it's something I do now. Even in like inter-office communications, coming from someone with a more of a like a typical career, the first line a lot of times used to be explanation or setup or qualification. Bullshit.
Hell of a weekend, huh? Could you believe those Timberwolves?
Or like, sorry, this is coming to you so late. I had things come up on my personal schedule.
Wasting energy.
And it's not done often enough.
No, it's, I mean, and to jump, I mean, yeah, well, to jump into intention.
Speaking of communication.
Hablábamos de comunicación.
Ooh. Was that, like, accurate?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I took Spanish. I was in Valencia. I was in Sevilla, and then I was in Valencia for a little bit. About a month and a half.
I remember that.
I studied Spanish in school. I hear a lot of people just, like, really misuse Spanish as a descriptor of Mexican people sometimes, or like they'll use Mexican as a descriptor of the language, and it's just like, fuck off.
Or they use Hispanic
to describe
European and like Portuguese and people from Spain.
Yeah, just
it's like there's just a lot of misuse, but so we're not going to get into that.
Okay,
that does have to do with communication, but we're not going to get
into
it. Yeah, what we are going to get into,
what we're getting into today
is a different type of communication.
Speaking of a different type of communication, Vince, look, I'm segueing this. Oh, no, I said it.
Oh, we said it. Flawless as usual. Sound effects. what we're talking about is dating, and that has a lot to do with communication. And in particular, the weirdest, the strangest, the most unique, maybe the most communicationally challenged date that we've ever been on. Grant.
No, man. So in the spirit of back and forth, I'm actually just going to go ahead and back this one to you.
Okay. That's fair. And by fair, I mean wildly unfair, but I'll go first. So I was what I thought was dating this woman. This is a couple years ago. I'm happily involved now, but I was single at the time and I had gone out with this woman, I don't know, probably like 7 or 8 times at this point. And it was all very like mostly platonic up until now, but we've been doing what is like normal dating. Like we've been meeting at places. You know, I paid for this, she paid for that.
Oh, nice.
You know, it's like
a little back and
like
forth.
Splitting. Right, exactly. It felt like dating. It felt like a date. But it wasn't really going anywhere, like in long term wise or physically. It was just kind of like a series of dates.
Sure.
And so, but then this one evening, we went to the beautiful Astor Cafe.
Oh, what a lovely
spot. It's a great spot.
Of St. Anthony, Maine, right?
Yeah, for sure.
For those in Minneapolis.
Yeah, for sure. And we split some fries, and it was a cold winter night. And
jeez.
It was nice. We had some drinks. And so I was going to walk her to her apartment before I took the bus home. Pretty standard. And so this is just such an appropriate story because it is you'll see in a second, it was a failure to communicate on a fundamental level. So we're walking her to her apartment, right? And so she's cold, it's slippery, there's ice, And so she does the linking of arms. You know this move?
Yeah, yeah.
She's like, oh, I don't want to fall. Can
for stability.
You, like, hold on to my
stability.
Arm.
Stability.
And I'm like, of course. Yeah, of course. So then we get to her place, and she's like, oh, the bus won't come for a while. Do you want to come in? And at this point, I'm like, all right. Now there's a level of understanding about, like, we're taking the date, and we're progressing to the next level.
Sure.
Or so I thought. And so we're headed up the stairs.
A little foreshadowing.
She's in like an old brownstone, like a three level, kind of like a crappy rundown place. And she's like, so my roommate's gone. And I'm like, oh, is that so? And she's like, yeah, she's just gone. I just wanted to tell you. And I'm like, okay, well.
Signal.
The lights are starting to flash, like all systems are go. And then she says, the heat in my apartment is broken.
Wow.
She says this to me. And then I'm like, I'm already reading into this. And then she like puts, she like wipes away all context and just puts it flat. So is it cool if we like share a blanket on the couch?
Wow, this is like, I mean, we're talking about communication. This has got to be
obvious.
Right.
So I'm thinking like she's sending very real and obvious signals. We get to the couch and she says, and she's like, do you want anything to drink? I'm going to have some wine. I'm like, oh yeah, of course. I would love some wine.
This is like so.
We're on the couch an empty apartment under the same blanket drinking wine. And so then I, you know, like one thing leads to another and I start like, I'm going to make a move. I really like this girl.
Sure.
Very attracted to her.
Yeah,
she's interesting.
She's
fun.
You don't have to rationalize. I mean, you're not.
But it's true. It's just like I'm into her, and so I'm making a move.
That's fair. What kind of move are you making?
I'm glad you asked. So I start with a pretty innocent move. We're doing hand on the arm.
Oh, hand on arm.
Hand on arm.
Hoa.
Under the covers.
Hoa under the covers. Been there.
Right.
That was actually seventh grade.
Hand on arm, right? Oh. So this is like very mature stuff. Sorry if the audience is offended. So a lot of times I've had this happen both ways.
Her hand on your arm,
right? So I'm not going to be scrupulous or shy. I've had times where I put my hand on the woman's arm and she's into it and she like reciprocates and then the rest is history. And then I've had some where I put the hand on the arm and she like very clearly moves away. Maneuvers out of position.
Yeah, yeah.
She's not into it.
Right? No.
So I've had it both ways, and I'm prepared for either. But this is a more interesting result. She does nothing.
Oh, she does the cold fish.
She does the frozen solid, right?
Yeah, which is tough because I mean you're a man of honor and of valor, and you certainly would not want to make anyone uncomfortable.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Like you're also like. I think we are sort of ingrained, and I don't mean this in any way to rationalize any sort of behavior that is negative, like too negative, but like we're looking for a signal to say no. There's like
right.
An onus on someone.
We just don't want to go back, and this goes for men and women thinking, I didn't take enough initiative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I let an opportunity pass. I should have been the more active one.
And this is in a position when you're thinking like, oh, yeah, like I'm into this person and this is a thing I want to do. And
right.
That's totally comfortable. That's totally real. I mean.
Absolutely. And so talking about communication, that's just, I'm for a thing and there's no back.
Right, right.
And so then I decide to up the ante.
Yeah, yeah. So right. So then you're increasing the communication volume and you're seeing, okay,
right.
will you send it back?
So, I mean, arm could be innocuous, misinterpreted. So I go leg. I go upper leg.
Okay. Yeah.
And so this is now we're talking about a more
this
more
message.
Sensual
this
area.
Message. You've got a bullhorn now. You're.
I'm like, hey,
I'm into you.
Right. This is happening. Nothing. No reaction.
You got to be like pretty concerned at this point.
I'm in a state of absolute panic.
But you're maybe thinking, and I'm projecting this on you. But maybe you're thinking like, oh, she's just like very shy. Like not. She just
exactly.
Like she is. Cool, and she kind of like wants me to put, and that's like that. That's
exactly
where this weird fine line, you know?
Exactly, man. So you're hitting the nail on the head, and so this isn't working either. And so then I'm like, we're just going for it. So I
yeah.
do hand in hand,
hand in hand,
and then I lean in. I lean toward her,
lean in for the big smooch.
And so again, I don't have a protective coating around my ego. I've leaned in for a kiss before and been denied.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like the turn away. Okay, I get it.
Okay, not into it.
I lean in.
Stop. Just, she cold fishes.
She
no.
She just does nothing.
Stop.
There's
That's
no reaction.
Too much.
And so, like, I didn't lean in making the smoochy face.
You
were
essentially standing in front of her yelling, "Hey, do you want to make out? Do you want to make out? Do you want, are you interested in make, just say yes or no.
Just please say yes or no," and she says nothing.
Wow.
And so, I mean, flash forward like 45 awkward minutes later, I
Stop.
Catch a bus. Nothing happened.
Wow.
And I, to this day, I just don't know. I don't know where it all went wrong. Listeners, if you're out there, write in. Weigh in on this. Let me know where I went wrong.
I'd love to hear some good worst date stories.
Oh, yes. And from you guys.
In a defensive way, to represent the female perspective here, sometimes people get uncomfortable and they don't know how to react and whatever.
Right. Sometimes, like, the mood just was gone suddenly and she didn't, like, know how to break it to me. And so,
yeah,
instead of, like, saying like, "I'm not into it," she just did nothing.
I hate to put the onus on you guys, but, like, be responsible and just say you're not into it. That's totally okay. It's just
man,
like,
woman, whoever. Just, yeah. If you're not into it, just say I'm not into it.
For all of the animals listening.
Yes.
Guys, just be real with each
just
other.
Put out the correct pheromones. Grant, can you tell me about your strangest date?
Oof. Yeah, I've had some weird ones. I know previously we spoke you about some I never did the OK Cupid or
the online dating right.
Per se. Although, like, I've met like a lot of humans in general from the internet.
Yes.
From Twitter.
But not
from,
through like an online dating
from,
site.
Yeah, yeah. And I've even like gone out with people that I've met on the internet, but just not through that medium. I'm thinking right now, there are two stories that really stick out to me.
I know the one I want to hear.
Which I'll go ahead and tell the one you want to hear, I think, because I know it. Which was basically, you know, back in the day. I'm not going to date this, but, you know, back in the day.
Some time ago
when I was using a little application called Tinder.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. You're familiar. You're familiar. It's
we'll show notes it.
It's kind of like online dating.
Yes, it's a very...
It's like a lightweight...
Talking about distillation.
It's the lightweight version.
Yeah.
It's the lightweight client. So
it's the most efficient version.
It is the most efficient way to online date, and which was what initially attracted me to it. and, you know, I'd connected with some people on there, and actually, funny enough, I had, like, just, like, the internet, I'd, like, met some cool people when I was abroad. Like,
yep.
In other cities, in a platonic way. I'd also gone on a couple dates, whatever. In this particular date, I'm not going to build it up too much just to say, like, oh, she seemed like an interesting human and, like, was cute from her photos. Okay.
Sure.
Those are two good signals.
Yeah.
So let's go on a date. I mean, not a lot to lose at this point. Single, whatever. Like to meet people. It's almost kind of like a game, not in that with people's feelings, but just like, oh, it's fun to meet people. This is fun.
Yeah. Dating is fun for a lot of reasons. And
yeah.
I think my favorite thing about dating is that you just get to meet a lot of people.
Absolutely. So I go on this date with this woman. She's a little bit older than me. As most of, like, it seemed like some of the people, or like the majority of the people, like, well, you know, kind of older than me.
Sure.
And I go on this date. Meet her for a drink and some appetizers, whatever. And, like, it's going great. Like, this girl...
You're hitting it off.
Yeah.
A lot in common.
Super cool. Like, yeah, we're just riffing. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then she, like, pauses and is like, hey, can I be real with you for a second? And it's like, oh, yeah. I know,
of course
I know it's coming. Oh yeah, we have this facade of like internetness or like of me on this thing. And like, oh, now we're like breaking the ice. We're being real. And she says...
She doesn't say like, oh, I'm a little older than you, or oh, I'm not really into bird watching.
Yeah, 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 or like,
not,
yeah,
it's not that.
This
it's
isn't that. Like super. It's like, so like, I have a boyfriend.
I see.
Okay, so there's the first time, and I'm like, oh, so like,
oh man.
So when you say a boyfriend, I mean, there are a lot of definitions. Like you have a like a guy friend. He's a really good platonic friend. You have like a really, you have like a gay best friend.
You
or something.
Just got out of a relationship and you haven't like signed the paperwork yet.
Yeah. You haven't signed that official boyfriend girlfriend breakup paperwork. And he's like, she said, no. So I have a boyfriend, and don't worry. He's like, he's totally cool with this. Okay. Well, I mean, technically, like, I'm more comfortable than I was a second ago, but I'm still not like.
But I'm not completely at ease.
I'm a lot less comfortable than I was at the start.
Right.
And so then she's like, "Oh yeah, he's in, you know, San Francisco or New York, or whatever, for, you know, for work, like 3/4 of the month, and we're both just like very, you know, we're very just like other people, and we just want each other to like have fun."
And she's like,
"Yeah, so, but like we went through it together, and like we agreed, and so he's approved of you, and so now I'm just like,
oh wow, this is a new dimension. So like, it's not completely unheard of to hear of an open relationship, right?
It's an open relationship. That's not like
absurdly bizarre, but it is like just another level of weirdness to run the potential hookups by one another. That's a whole new level of vulnerability."
Next level. And it's like, you know, my ego is definitely like, well, cool, like this bro,
I guess.
but then I jump, you know, as my mind often does, is like, wait, so if I'm in his position, okay, here's what I'm thinking. And then I'm like, oh no, I want her to hook up with like the douchiest, like nerdiest little guy.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh wait, oh, so he approved of me? Like, what, right, is that?
He's like not made insecure by me? Like, what does that mean? So you've somehow managed to like weave this in a way that makes you like feel like inferior,
as I often do. So anyway, I mean, it was a weird one. It was
unique. It was new. It was interesting, and it was like the communication. Now that is someone who was not failing to communicate. She was open,
very forthright, and actually, I respect that a lot. I think
for sure, absolutely. There's no other way to play that scenario.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ingrained in us to like not be real about that stuff.
But she was, and that's commendable.
Yeah.
So weird for different reasons.
So yeah, and then we leave it at that.
Do you want to? I mean, that was one of the more fun off-topic topics we've had in a while.
You down with OTT?
Even though I've heard that story before, it's still it's always fun to hear it. Do you want to get back into it for some last thoughts here, Grant?
Some LTs?
I mean, what the abbreviations today?
It's like the weakest form of like wit to it, actually, it doesn't even, you can't even call it wit at that point, to just abbreviate something as like a means of progressing.
Affirming
like,
the whatever.
Oh, like, hey, look, I'm saying another thing about the thing because I'm clever. I was going to try and acronym that, but there was too many words. Saying another thing about the thing.
I lost track of it already. So what I would like to talk about, and let's do the support and the leave them with something.
Yeah. I mean, and actually I kind of, we got to delve into this idea of this back and forth when it comes to these, some of these collaborations, which I'll dig
absolutely
into.
Absolutely.
But so Vince, can you just tell people how they can support you? And you know, if there's, yes, something they can, you could leave them with one thought, and then maybe if you want to extrapolate on that.
For sure. Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks,
Vince.
Grant, for the
no
setup.
Worries.
The way you can support us is to go to 10khrs.co and listen to the newest
/subscribe.
Yes, I was just about to mention. Find us on the web. Listen, love it.
Interact.
Subscribe to us.
Send us your
letters. Subscribe to our newsletter. Go on iTunes. Find us. We're easy to find. Just search 10khrs. Then you can subscribe to us there, and you can leave a review. We really like that. What we really want more than anything is not just positivity. It's just feedback. It's just a channel of communication, just like what we're talking about here today. Talk to us. Reach out to us. You can find us online. You can find me on Twitter at Vincent Repeat.
What a great handle.
Grant, where can they find you?
At Grant Spanier.
Yes. And you can also email us.
Yeah. Yeah, email us. I mean, our names at 10khrs.co.
Really easy.
VinceCoach@gmail.com, GrantSpanier@gmail.com. Love to hear from you.
Gmail or at 10khrs. It's all good. My last thoughts, we talked about the back and the fourth.
Okay.
Now I'd want to talk about the fourth again. So you get the fourth, the back, and now the fourth.
Okay.
And what does that mean? That means responding to feedback. I'm going to keep it really quick because this is something that we could do a whole nother show topic about. But I just think too many people are terrible at receiving feedback. And this is in a couple ways. The most obvious way is people who are too sensitive, whose ego gets bruised easily, who are too defensive about the work. They have to understand that communication, when frank, can sometimes be grating and brazen. But, I mean, that's what you want. You don't want sheltered criticism. Or if you do want sheltered criticism, then you don't want what's best for your work, right? So you can't pick both. You either want what's best for your work, or you want something that's going to, like, sugarcoat something. So you don't want that. At the same time, knowing how to take a compliment and social grace is one of the least possessed skills. I know people who I respect very, very deeply. And I mean extremely deeply. At the highest level of respect, they cannot take a compliment. And it's a little bit embarrassing because it's the easiest thing to do. You have to have respect for the people that went out on a limb to pay you a compliment. So when someone gives you positive feedback and then you poo-poo it or parlay it or fire back another compliment, I mean, that's frankly disrespect.
Are you talking to me right now?
No, not at all. Grant, okay. You're definitely
I swear to God I wasn't fishing there.
Right.
Honestly, though, I just mean, like, you've said some really nice things to me in general, and I'm conscious of trying to, like, be good at
You're a completely, like, grade A.
Okay.
Like, no fault of yours at all on taking a compliment, but
it's a hard thing, yeah.
It's not easy for everyone, but it's, like, really easy to learn, frankly. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, have a little grace and understand that the person had to put themselves out there to give you the compliment.
Yeah.
And so if you're receiving feedback, positive or negative, just receive it with an open mind and an understanding of the reason that it was given to you.
Fuck, man. A compliment. I've thought actually a lot about that. Don't bounce it right back.
Don't bounce
That's it. That's the worst.
Yeah,
it's just so not, it's so not genuine.
Exactly.
Like, hey,
even if you mean it, it doesn't feel like you mean it.
Yeah. Just wait on that. That's good advice, man. That's really good advice. I think that's just something, like, man, especially in the Midwest, we're bad at it, but in general, people could just pick up on that.
Stand to improve.
So, as far as supporting us, I think you were on point. I was actually, like, when I was cringing, I thought you were about to say, like, go to the Cosby podcast or whatever. Yeah. I was about to, like, punch you.
No, don't do that. I mean, if you run into the Cosby cast,
I, like, opened it up.
Oh. If you run into it, that's cool. If you like it, that's whatever. But, no. I mean,
if you subscribe, if you go to Cosby Sweaters,
yeah, don't do that.
Okay. So, bouncing from what you were saying and really kind of getting into a big point of what we're talking about in some of the things that I've voiced to you even, you know, over the last, like, year or 2 years is this idea of communication and the onus of communication and the respect of communication, especially when a lot of our projects are run over email, they're run over phones, they're run over whatever. Like, keeping up a consistent, honest, productive line of communication is paramount. Additionally, when you're talking about getting feedback, being graceful about taking feedback, being graceful about giving feedback, coming from the right perspective, giving some context for it, or also not giving context when you don't need to, and just saying it, being forthright, those are all super important. And I think one thing that people could take away from this, especially people who are maybe in more junior positions. I mean, yeah, especially people who are in more junior positions.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
True.
Who are potentially coming at it from an angle of, like, they have been hired to support. They are supporting. They are in, you know, that position. I think that, you know, the easiest way to differentiate yourself and stand out and do good work and grow, and B, like, the responsibility is to communicate clearly, effectively, quickly. And I think what that means is, and I'm going to give an example. So I've had, like, several interns with Lesco. You know, we're not bringing people in with this, with Green Room, you know, just a range of projects.
Sure.
And to be fair, a lot of these, you know, I am young and I am talking to young people. And so there's sort of like a dynamic that is sort of
there's
right there.
There's a layer there.
Okay. But And so the expectations are sometimes off and whatever. But what I've tried to communicate over and over, especially the last like year, especially the last 6 months, is that if you are hired for a thing, you should expect something. You should expect that back and forth. You should expect feedback. You should expect nurturing. You should expect growth. But you are hired to come in and to own something or to push something forward. If that's the case, then you are on the communication. And a lot of where communication breaks down, I think my biggest area of communication breakdown is when I feel nervous about sending something because I don't feel like it's good enough. I feel nervous because it's not as far as I said it would be. I feel nervous. It's all about my insecurity. It's all about my former communication or promise or whatever.
100%.
And so it's on me to communicate regardless, because the most frustrating thing in the goddamn world is when somebody does not message you and it's just in the dark.
It's in limbo forever, and there's nothing worse.
You are dead to me.
Purgatory.
So besides that, I think the way to avoid it is to communicate quickly, to communicate often. And the onus is on you as a creative to not hold your ideas so precious, to not hold your designs, your mock-ups, your concepts so close to your body that I can't get feedback for you right away. I know they're not perfect. I know you're capable of better.
And that's fine. No one expects perfection. That's why you need to open the channel early.
Yeah, get feedback, because guess what? That's on you. If you come to me, you know, and you have a deadline 1 week from today, and you come to me on day six, day seven with one concept, with one thing that is very fleshed out and it's way off, you're fucked. You're done.
Over. But if you come to me on day two with crap,
then we can build from there.
We can talk about.
This is the draft we talk about.
Then we're okay.
How do we start the creative process? We get a draft out. We move forward. Where's the way forward? Forward. So start something. Get something shit-y out. Give it to me, and then I will tell you, this is, shoot one bullet, and I will tell you how far you're off from the target.
And even if you're shot the opposite direction.
Now we can at least turn you around.
At least we can talk about it, right? At least we can talk about it. I will never hold someone at fault for being completely wrong. Like, even if I mean completely wrong. As long as they...
It's brave.
As long as they took a shot at it, and they did it early. And they and they did it in a way in which we can improve. So, I'm completely thrilled at that point.
Absolutely. I mean, in that whole metaphor, we're talking about like, are you going to spend a week trying to aim and then fire one bullet? Or are you going to, you have a full clip. You have 80 shots. Are you going to shoot on day one and then adjust from there?
And
duh.
We can guide the gun.
Seriously. Wow. I mean, in a very real context, you know, I'm designing some presentations right now. I talk about Gumroad a lot, but I'm designing some presentations right now. And I find that even if I'm not going in the visual, like I'm not sending you a deck, whatever, my first draft might just be like either based off of what you've given me or an outline in words of what I understand this to be, because now we have a frame of reference. That's why we use common language. That's why we use things, because it gives us a starting point, just like with our careers, just like with anything. Find a starting point, move forward, get something, iterate from there. Boom. Ship it, motherfucker.
And on that note, I would think we should say ship it.
Yeah, it's shipped. Harder, harder.